This is a 720 to go podcast from Chicago's WGN Radio 720.
This podcast is sponsored by ADM.
As one of the world's largest agricultural processors, ADM is uniquely positioned to serve the world's growing needs for abundant food and renewable energy. ADM.
When it comes to the business of America's farmland, you need the information from the people who know it best. That's why we bring you AgriCast with Orion Samuelson and Max Armstrong.
Well, good morning, Roger, and good morning, world. It's good to be with you here on this Saturday morning for our weekly get-together to talk about the fascinating world of agriculture that provides food for the table and clothes for our back and a roof over our head and now energy in the tank. All of that was talked about this week as Max attended the annual convention of the National Cattlemen's Beef Association in Nashville. Some big crowds there, and we'll hear from Max in just a few minutes here. And then I spent a couple of days up at Wisconsin Dells at the annual Wisconsin Corn and Soybean Growers Convention. Also going on at the same time, a gathering of Wisconsin pork producers. Their topic was the bacon shortage, or is it really a shortage? It'll be kind of fascinating to see if American consumers are faced with a shortage of food, something that just hasn't happened in this country. We produce enough. The problem is getting it to the people who need it. But anyway, interesting week. And as I've said, the winter time is the time we don't do much farming in North America, but we do a lot of meetings. And we get together for the outlook on prices and where they're going. And we talk about policy and where it's going. And, of course, all sorts of wondering this year with the new administration in Washington, D.C., because we have to write a farm bill this year, and it's going to be interesting to see what happens there. But the Wisconsin Corn Soybean Conference, always a good event. We were up there about 3 years ago to speak at that gathering, and enjoy very much saying hello to a lot of great WGN listeners who turn out for that convention. And I have the opportunity to get to sort of catch up with them on what has been going on. Meanwhile, Max headed for Nashville, Tennessee, and we're going to check in with him shortly when we continue here on the Saturday Morning Show. We are at 9 minutes after 5 o'clock here on the Saturday Morning Show on WGN Radio Chicago. And interesting convention every year, one that I've attended many times. And this year, Max Armstrong is president of the National Association of Farm Broadcasting. So he gets invited to quite a few farm gatherings to appear on the program, and that was certainly the case this week in Nashville, Tennessee. But, Max, I understand probably one of the big stories was the attendance number, right?
Well, Orion, they've never had a bigger attendance for the Cattle Industry Convention and Trade Show. We got the word yesterday morning when I was at the convention there that they had 9,000 people in attendance. And they were expecting, because of the location, Nashville, Tennessee is a good location for drive-ins, they say. For folks who want to drive in for the day from Tennessee or from Kentucky, southern Indiana, southern Illinois, and they were expecting, after all was said and done, to have 9,500 for the attendance at the Cattle Industry Convention and Trade Show. As they're wrapping up today, they are naming a new president. Fourth-generation cattleman from Elwood, Nebraska, Craig Uden, is taking over in that role, and he's got a rather diverse operation because he not only has feedlot operations, he has a cow-calf enterprise as well. I visited with him about the landscape that he sees. I said, Craig, what does it look like here as you take over this leadership role with the NCBA?
Well, you know, Max, we've went through some interesting times. We had a really high market, and then we settled down on a pretty poor market last year, but we've rebounded about 25% since late summer. So we've leveled this thing off and got the market back into the lower 120s for fed cattle and brought the average price up for the feeders. But as we look forward, we do know we have a lot of growing protein, not only beef, but we've increased the herd. We have a lot of poultry and pork out there. So one of the things we're addressing and we're really going to continue to push is opening the borders for trade, because we have to have this trade. We're just too reliant on trade to move and stabilize our markets and move all this protein in the future.
The agreements that we've had, many of those have been in place for a long time. We think of the North American Free Trade Agreement. And you know how long it takes to negotiate trade agreements, or how long it has taken traditionally. Do you find it a troubling, unnerving scene right now, going into some uncharted waters?
Well, you know, we worked on the TPP for quite a while. That's not going to be there. It's interesting times that we've had in the last few weeks, but we're very optimistic that we're going to have that trade issue brought to the forefront, because, you know, all agriculture exports 27% of the product, and we're going to monitor real heavily on this NAFTA, because as trading partners, we've seen tremendous growth with Canada and Mexico, and do a lot of trade with our beef product in both those countries. So I think we're going to continue to watch this, and we're going to engage with this new administration, because trade is vitally important for our industry.
Back to what we were talking about earlier, that mindset, that frame of mind of the men and women of the cattle industry, it's closely tied, of course, to what their prices are, but it's more than that, isn't it? I mean, there are other things that come on their radar screen that help guide their business.
Well, you know, regulations is another top priority for this organization. We've had a lot of regulations the last few years, and things like Waters of the United States, we're going to continue to address that. We look at the Gypsy Rule, Antiquities Act. There's just a whole lot of things out there. You know, the Farm Bill's coming up for review, and they're going to start that process real soon. So we've got a lot of people. We've got a great staff. We've got a great team. And we've got a lot of engaged members. I think the thing, as we come to this event, we're going to have a lot of turnout here. And I think it's been very challenging, but I think people are coming to look for what opportunities and how they can best adjust their businesses to change with the changing times. So I look forward to a very successful week and a lot of participation.
It's been a long battle against the estate tax. Will you finally be able to put the nail in the coffin when it comes to that challenge that has bedeviled folks in the cattle industry for, well, decades, actually?
Right, and we're going to, that's one of our priority issues as well. As we address taxes, we want to address the death tax and finally put that to rest if we can. We also, the Section 179, we want to continue to work on that because we need that kind of opportunity with our folks to be able to pass these operations from generation to generations on the death tax, but we also need the 179 exemption in order to facilitate our business needs, because we are a very high capitalized industry, so that would benefit the producers greatly.
Craig, when you look at your members, and I think of your members as specifically who operate in the Western United States, and all the agencies with which they must interact and all the regulations that come to bear there, how do they feel about this promise that we've heard, the promise from this administration that they'll do something about this regulatory morass?
Well, we're very happy with the selection who is nominated for the Interior. And hopefully we can push back on some of these Endangered Species Acts. We just continue to pile them on more endangered species every year, but we never look and take them off when they've satisfied that they're not an endangered species. So we want to look at that. Land use, as far as grazing, water development, forestry, and some other aspects like that. We're very hopeful that we can start having some movement on this overburdensome of the public land, so our producers can operate in a responsible manner. We hope that we can move some of that to where there's a lot more local control, because it's just not the producers that are affected when the government takes all this and pushes it at us. It really affects the communities in the western segment of the United States.
Nebraska cattleman Craig Uden, the new president of the National Cattlemen's Beef Association. They have a huge trade show. It seems to be getting bigger every year. And it's a wide range of things that you see sold there. There's western wear and boots, the kind of thing that you would expect a cattleman to want to purchase. And there's a lot of equipment. Caterpillar, for example, had an exhibit there. Case IH had an extensive display. John Deere was well represented, too. I talked with Beverly Flores, who is the new North American Communication Manager for John Deere, and she shared a little bit of insight as to how they see this convention and trade show and the industry overall.
You know, I think from a John Deere perspective, as we look at the cattle industry, just like any industry, they have issues and questions that they're facing, but also opportunities. And the conference itself is a great opportunity for those cattlemen and women to have those conversations and find some of those solutions. And we're always excited when John Deere is one of those solutions for them.
When you look around at this crowd, one interesting thing about it is you see seasoned veterans and younger operators, too. That's encouraging.
It is. You know, it's. I was fortunate enough to grow up in the ranching industry, and it is generational. And I think that's one of the things, as you think about the cattle industry, it's part of our heritage within the United States. And at John Deere, we're fortunate to have a very long history as well. And when you bring all those two together, we're proud to have that relationship, and we have that through our loyalty program for the livestock industry, as well as NCBA. We have a member discount program that they can leverage.
When it's a family business, it really is a different scenario, isn't it? I mean, they're there for the long haul. They're planning for that extra generation in many instances, fully intending to pass along that farmer ranch.
It is. And, you know, as you bring all of that together, it does start with conferences like this. And I know yesterday, as everybody was checking in, I saw a lot of the younger generations even being pushed in the strollers and, you know, getting ready to have that family interaction, but also that opportunity for the parents and, you know, even the grandparents and the owners, the operators, to really learn, you know, what can they do for their operation and what's going to help them not only make the decisions, but how they can execute it as well.
So much is said about the millennial generation, and I know you folks at Deere have looked at them as well and how they're going to embrace the future. Is it a different mindset, as you see it, and especially is it less so in agriculture than it might be in the rest of society?
You know, one of the things, I'm fortunate when I talk about agriculture, talk about farming as well as the livestock industry, and I think it's a team sport, and I think that's true in ranching, in the cattle industry, and you leverage not only the people that you grew up with in the community, but also some of the advisors and, you know, looking to make the best marketing decisions, looking to make the best health decisions for the herd as well. And, you know, the younger generation, I think they're connected maybe in a different way as they look to media and especially social media, but the conversation and the communication is integral, I think, to being successful in agriculture.
Beverly Flores representing John Deere. It was my privilege to be the MC for yesterday's general session. At that convention in Nashville, Tennessee, for the National Cattlemen's Beef Association, an estimated 4,000 in attendance for that particular session. Dana Perino, who is on Fox News, was there to speak to the group, and they felt it was a pretty timely booking to have her there on the program, especially with all of the changes that have taken place in Washington. And while her perspective might be that of a conservative, and having served in the Bush administration, the administration of Bush 43, I'd have to say that it was a nonpartisan presentation that she made, analyzing where the Republicans are now and where the Democrats are as well, in the wake of the election, and looking at some of the things out there on the horizon that she sees changing. One thing that impressed me, Orion, was her depth of knowledge of the issues for the cattle industry. She had a very good grasp on things such as trade, recognizing that how trade agreements historically have been very important to farmers and ranchers, and how at this stage of the game, with some of those existing agreements severed or taken off the drawing board, there's this area of uncharted waters here. But she also acknowledged what a difference it makes lightening that load of regulations that, as Craig Uden noted, have become so burdensome for America's beef producers. That's our report on this year's Cattle Industry Convention. Orion?
Well, thank you very much, Max, for checking in from Nashville with that report at 20 minutes after 5 o'clock here on the Saturday morning show. And indeed, it's a convention that I always enjoyed because I used to say, you know, if a cattleman showed up at the convention with a new Stetson and shiny boots without manure and maybe a pretty lady on the arm, it generally would be a pretty good year for the cattle industry. I would think maybe that sign has pretty much disappeared. But we look forward to reporting on the activities of the cattlemen throughout the year here on WGN Radio. And we'll go back to the gathering in Wisconsin Dells when we continue here on the Saturday morning show. Going to farm conventions after the November election becomes a lot more interesting because so many questions and so few answers at this point. Concerns, yes, But at the same time, as you heard in the visit with the president of the NCBA a few minutes ago, maybe a taking away of some of the over-regulating that we've seen in the world of agriculture. Generally, regulations written by people sitting in offices in Washington, D.C., who have never seen a watershed or who have never seen a pasture, have never been on a farm or a ranch. And that's always of concern to people who do this every day for a living. And so they're all waiting to see really what's going to happen in the year ahead with the writing of a new farm bill on the schedule for agriculture. And that probably won't get written by the end of this year, but they will be working on it, and we'll be checking in on some of the new members of the House Agriculture Committee who will help write the bill, and, of course, a new Secretary of Agriculture, Sonny Perdue. So a lot of questions in the agricultural community, and at this point, not too many answers until they know who they'll be dealing with and how far they want to go on regulations and trade. And it's definitely an interesting, but for some people, scary time as well. Yesterday, after I spoke to the group at the Wisconsin Corn Soy Expo, and incidentally, they do bring together not only the producers of the feed for animal agriculture, they bring together some of the consumers, because the Wisconsin Pork Association held its 2017 Expo and Taste of Elegance. And so we had corn producers, soybean producers, pork producers all coming together. And the panel that I moderated after my presentation yesterday morning, a panel of four bankers. Sitting on stage with me, I had Matt Lars of the Town Bank, Steve Fleming of the Investors Bank, Kurt Pettick of the Rabo Agri-Finance Group, Ty Martin of the Badger Land Financial Group. And we had an interesting discussion and a give and take in front of the audience, and the room was full for it, because this year, after a couple of years of prices that have continued to decline in the corn and the soybean markets, we talk about lower prices there a great deal. And so the question is, what do we do? And will the bankers be running my farm? And indeed, there is that possibility. You're not farming alone anymore, as I've said many times. You're joined by environmental groups and animal rights groups and, of course, bankers who have always played a role in agricultural production here in the United States. And one of the questions that was asked of the bankers at the meeting yesterday is what they see ahead for the ag economy, and all of them said, be sure to plan and take a look at where you stand right now financially. And one of the other questions, is it a good time to start crop farming in Wisconsin, or should a crop farmer consider cashing out now? And then the follow-up question, should crop farmers consider diversifying now? And if so, what do you see as best opportunities for farm diversification in Wisconsin? Well, the answers were interesting, but again, they pretty much boil down to all of these decisions depend, first of all, on a good marketing plan and a serious look at your current financial situation. And then it's a one-person decision or a family decision on whether they get out of the crop farming business or whether they diversify, whatever. But one of the questions I asked the bankers this year, when your customers come in to review their financial situation and the credit needed, will crop insurance be required as part of that loan application? And all four of them said, yes, there has to be that protection in the form of crop insurance that is replaced in the annual payments for tough times in the world of agriculture. So a couple of other questions that I asked the bankers, what should their customers do to prepare for tough times? First of all, They all stress the fact that if you're a farmer or a rancher in trouble financially, they said, we know that. And so don't avoid us. Come in and talk to us, because maybe we can get into a situation soon enough that we can prevent a financial catastrophe. And they said it is extremely important that a loan application coming from whoever be totally honest on where the financial situation for the farm or ranch is at the moment. And one of them said, hey, don't hide it from us, because today's information technology, we know when there's a challenge out there. So instead of running and not wanting to talk about it, first thing you do is get in to see your loan provider and figure out what you're going to do, honestly. Pork producers, it was kind of interesting for them, because suddenly this past week, headlines, rising prices set to bite U.S. bacon lovers. Pork industry moves to quash bacon shortage fears. Well, that December cold storage report showing the smallest amount of frozen pork bellies in storage since they started issuing the report in 1957, was quickly picked up by some of the national news services. Oh, my God, we're going to have a shortage of bacon in this country. Kind of interesting, because I don't think we've talked about food shortage of any kind in the United States for decades, but those are the headlines. And my response is, if you provide the financial incentive for producers, they'll produce what you want and what you need. But it's interesting how our consumption of bacon has changed in this country, because one of the most often asked questions I've had during my career at WGN, I'm no longer getting, but the question was, what is a frozen pork belly? Because we'd report frozen pork belly futures from the Mercantile Exchange. And, of course, the simple answer is bacon. Bacon comes from the belly of the hog. And if I have time in the second half of our get-together this morning, I'll talk about why we're not trading frozen pork belly futures anymore. And that's one of the changes that we're seeing among the many in what we do production-wise and sales-wise in agriculture today. We're at the 5:30 mark here on the Saturday Morning Show on Chicago's very own 720 WGN Chicago. And 25 minutes before 6 o'clock, welcome back to the Saturday Morning Show. We'll check in to discuss livestock markets with Dennis Smith, who is the livestock specialist with Archer Financial Services. And we'll also talk some more about current activity on the calendar, because coming up in just a week, the National Outstanding Young Farmer Awards Congress, been going on for over half a century, and it'll be in Greenville, South Carolina this year. And between now and 6 o'clock, I will name the 10 couples who are the 10 finalists. And from the 10, judges will pick 4, and they'll be named the National Outstanding Young Farmers of 2017. So a week from now, we'll be in Greenville, and Max will be here on the pilot's chair for the Saturday Morning Show. Now we say welcome to Samuelson Says, brought to you by Wink Products Company, makers of quality specialty cleaning products since 1947. I'm Orion Samuelson with a question this week. Is that college degree really worth it? We'll talk about it when we continue here on Samuelson Says. But right now, let's talk about probably your favorite appliance in the kitchen. Maybe not everybody, but I think most of us say that that coffee maker is indeed the most popular and loved appliance in the kitchen. But keeping that coffee maker clean sometimes takes more work than you want, unless you're dealing with one of the products from the Wink folks in Eldora, Iowa, because they have a coffee maker cleaner that is the perfect cleaning solution to remove those nasty mineral deposits that make coffee, well, taste metallic and cause your coffee maker to clog. So deal with that problem. Pick up Wink Coffee Maker Cleaner today and see what a difference it really makes with your favorite kitchen appliance. You can learn more at wink.com. That's W-H-I-N-K.com. When you look at the cost of a college degree today, is the cost really worth it? Well, that's a question that came up in a conversation I was having with some of our younger producers on radio and television as we talked about some of the costs they're facing with kids going into college. And the cost of college today is stunning to a lot of people. And so finally in the conversation, one of the members said, is the college education really worth it? Well, that's a question that only you can answer, but certainly it's one that's being raised as we continue to see an increase in the cost of education. Luckily, I'm far beyond that, but I look at my son and daughter-in-law who are facing huge college bills for their two children, my grandchildren, and as I hear from other people who say, I'm not sure I can afford it. There's no question that a college degree, I'm sure, will help in getting a job, at least if it's in a meaningful part of our economy, like agriculture. Great demand for college graduates from agricultural schools. But we also need people who probably don't need a college education, but perform great services for all of us, the electricians and the plumbers, and the carpenters and the builders who maybe are not helped by a college education, but certainly play an important role and in many cases make a pretty good living doing what they're doing. But I think one of the things we need to question about the cost of a college education today is I look at my granddaughter and the dormitory that she is paying for is a fairly large room with three bedrooms. And so there are three residents in that dorm, but the cost is very, very high. Seems to me that when I spent about 3 weeks at the University of Wisconsin a long time ago, I had one room with a bed, and the room was probably 10 by 10. So maybe on the college side, we need to no longer provide luxury housing, and that would certainly help the cost of education. But is it worth it? Only you can decide that. My thoughts on Samuelson Says. Samuelson Says, a presentation of Tribune Radio Networks here at 19 minutes before 6 o'clock. I wish I had more time to talk about the discussion with the young folks I work with in production on my radio TV shows who are really concerned. They don't want to have to mortgage everything in order to pay for the college education, but at the same time, they want the education. And yes, it's understandable. So that's an never-ending conversation that parents facing kids going to college are going to be talking about forever, really. It's 19 minutes before 6 o'clock here on the Saturday morning show. And certainly the market price for cattle, the major point of discussion in Nashville at the Cattlemen's Convention this week. And so we're going to talk about markets for cattle and hogs when we continue here on the Saturday Morning Show. Dennis Smith, the livestock man at Archer Financial Services, joins us this week on our Saturday Morning Show and on the markets to talk about a livestock market that has been probably, well, in my opinion, one of the most unusual we've had in years in 2016.
You're talking about the hog market with a shift in the demand curve, yes, and the cattle market that's trying to find a bottom. but yet we're still in an expansionary phase. But, Orion, I think the most exciting thing is the shift in the demand curves, especially for pork that we've witnessed. And it's the best possible news that the hog producers could be hearing and experiencing right now. And we really averted a disaster in the fourth quarter when we were all concerned about capacity, slaughter capacity being exceeded. It never happened. And now we've got a good, strong uptrending market. It's a really wonderful news for the hog producer.
Well, actually, we've seen an increase in value for the last 7 months, haven't we?
You bet. We've seen that cutout value rise. We've seen the cash market firm. We've experienced positive, in fact, very positive, if not near record, processing margins for the pork packer. And that averted the situation last fall. They were willing to pay overtime and schedule overtime because of the profitable margins and because the demand was there. We now know this. We didn't really know the demand was there at the moment it was happening. But fourth quarter consumption indices indicate that the demand for pork has shifted for numerous reasons, and that's unlikely to change very quickly. So we should see a continued uptrend into the spring time frame.
Then let's talk cattle, because this week the National Cattlemen's Beef Association met in Nashville. Max Armstrong was there to cover that, and there may have been a few tears at that event because what a roller coaster ride the last year has been.
You bet. It's been a tough year on the backside of a tough year. So you're talking back-to-back difficult years as far as Fed closeouts. Cow-calf guys done a lot better during this transition. Maybe that's going to change. In my opinion, we need to see feeder cattle prices come down to give the guy feeding cattle in the feedlot an opportunity to purchase feeders, place them in the feed yard, and have an opportunity for profit. That was really non-existent throughout the whole year and much of the previous year. So we're in a transition right now as far as cattle prices. We've actually come off the fall lows, the October lows. Now we're pulling back again. I do not think this current pullback goes very deep. I think we're going to stabilize, and you'll see this uptrend remain intact into the, say, the end of the first quarter.
Any surprise in the semi-annual cattle inventory report?
We were a little bit surprised that the calf crop was up 3%. I think a lot of the trade was expecting that to be up 2%, 1.5% maybe. It was up 3%. We thought maybe there would be some changes in the imports of feeders up from Mexico and down from Canada that might alter that size. But the calf crop is up 3%. That's the number we have. That's going to impact placements for the rest of this year. It's going to impact beef production for this year and into next year. So realistically speaking, you have to be prepared for rising beef production in the next 1 to 2 years.
So you're saying things might not get much better till 2018?
What we need is the demand for beef to really come to the occasion. And I think it's possible of doing that. We are already experiencing that in the pork sector. So we need to see beef demand, both domestically and export, show some improvement, show some strength. And globally, if we continue to see global economies rise, if we continue to see the U.S. economy rise, if we continue to experience a little bit of inflation, I think you can see demand come to the beef sector and really help out the cattlemen.
Poultry a factor in the animal protein market these days?
It's a major factor as far as consumption trends. You know, the beef guys are still fighting the trend toward more poultry in the diet. We are watching the bird flu situation globally, specifically in South Korea, to see if it spreads in other parts of Asia. So poultry is always a major factor, but right now everything seems to be in pretty good balance as far as production, record large production of pork and poultry, rising beef production. We've got to see demand come to the market and help stabilize, if not raise prices.
Stronger economy in the U.S. would do that?
You bet it would. That would really go a long way. We're really at nearly full employment right now. If you see a little bit of wage price increase, that's going to make people feel better. When people feel better, they consume more meat. Lower retail gasoline prices is also a big help as far as consumer attitudes and giving people the desire to spend more on their everyday diets.
Getting back to poultry for a minute, were you as surprised as I was when we airshipped 4 million eggs, shell eggs, to South Korea?
Yeah, the numbers in the poultry industry are mind-boggling. You can't even hardly wrap your mind around it. So it's a huge industry. What we can do as far as in the poultry industry, as far as meat production and diet production, is amazing.
Want to do a little history with you, if I could, this week, Dennis, because a letter from an old-timer, is how I'll describe it, raised several interesting questions about a week ago. Why are we no longer trading frozen pork belly futures again?
The main reason is the seasonality of consumption is flattened out. In the old days, we would store bellies all winter long, and then they would be readily consumed in the summer months when bacon was much more heavily consumed along what we call the BLT season. At the same time, pork production dropped severely in the summertime. Well, the seasonality of pork production has flattened out a little bit, and most definitely the seasonality of bacon consumption has flattened out. And I attribute a lot of that to the fast food restaurants offering bacon at the breakfast menu and also on the burgers year-round.
Bacon is included in almost every menu item, it seems.
Most definitely, and it's really showing up as far as the consumption of bacon. If we had a belly contract trading right now, it had been limit up for several days following last week's monthly cold storage report, which showed a massive drawdown of bellies in the fourth quarter. Quite frankly, it's something we've never experienced before.
Then the other bit of history that was mentioned. We always used to mention on the air Jewish slaughter holidays because of an impact on the cattle market, for example. And this letter writer said, you no longer do that. Is that no longer a factor?
I would have to say that's correct. That is no longer a major factor as far as meat consumption patterns here in the United States.
The reason at that time being that when there was a holiday, we didn't need quite as many cattle to go through the slaughterhouses.
I'm not sure if it's an indication of not quite as religious of a society or strict of a religious society. I know the Catholics that never ate meat on Friday, while that's still in play, it's not quite as rigid and strict as it used to be 20, 30 years ago.
I would guess the same for the Lenten season, that we probably aren't as restrictive on meat consumption.
That's correct. So a lot of these trends are just not quite as entrenched within the society as they were 20, 30, 40 years ago.
Finally, winding down on meat exports from the U.S., pork and beef particularly, are we holding?
Yes, the meat exports are very strong. The recent pork data, it was November exports, were record large. The beef exports in November, which is the latest data that we have, were up 18% from November of a year ago. These are big changes in export numbers. And now the dollar has weakened up during the month of January, just the opposite of what everybody thought it would do. So if the dollar continues to trend lower, that will enhance exports even further.
Any countries in particular that accounted for that increase?
We are now starting to see China coming in as a very large and consistent buyer of U.S. pork, and they've kind of been number three throughout all of last year. The beef sector continues to export. Japan, Mexico, and South Korea is your three big customers for beef.
Are we going to get beef into China soon, or are we still doing the paperwork?
We're still doing the paperwork. We will get it there eventually. Soon is not something that applies to negotiations with China.
Nothing is soon in any trade negotiations. I have finally decided it takes forever to do it. As always, Dennis, we appreciate your expertise, and we'll look forward to our next visit.
Thank you.
Dennis Smith, Archer Financial Services. We are 3.5 minutes away from news time on a chilly morning across the Midwest here on WGN Radio Chicago. And in our closing moments together, a tip of the hat to the folks at Culver's. Not only do they serve great food, but Culver's restaurants across 24 states continue to build support for American agriculture as part of the chain's Thank You Farmers program. Since its inception in 2013, over $1 million has been raised in support of the National FFA organization, local FFA chapters, and a variety of other agriculture organizations. Culver's remains committed to sourcing the finest ingredients that America's family growers have to offer, and they do that by giving back to agriculture with the Thank You Farmers program. In 2016, they raised over $360,000. Now, you, the customer of Culver's, helped, but they say Thank You Farmers, I say thank you, Culver's, for recognizing where the great food you serve really starts, on the farms and ranches of America. Well, to 1 week from today, we'll be in Greenville, South Carolina, the annual National Outstanding Young Farmer Awards Congress. The judges have narrowed the number down to 10. And between now and then, they'll lower the number and pick 4 National Outstanding Young Farmers for 2017. I'm quickly going through the names of those 10 finalists, Kevin and Rebecca Hicks, and they're from the state of Arkansas. From Georgia, it'll be Ben and Julie Anna Boyd. Then we turn to Illinois, Pearl City, Chad and Deb Bremer, finalists in the National Outstanding Young Farmer Awards Congress. Minnesota, there we find Aaron and Jessica Rodermacher. And then Mississippi, Brad and Molly Judson, the state finalists for that state. North Carolina, Jarman and Nancy Sullivan. And then we go up to North Dakota, Matt and Stacy Swenson, the finalists from that state, and the Tor and Nicole Anderson, and they farm in New Jersey. And a couple of more here, Dean and Sarah Hutto, and the Huttos are from South Carolina, where they're holding the Outstanding Young Farmer Program. And then the 10th finalist from Wisconsin, Mark and Angie Ulness. So those are the 10 finalists that the judges are now taking a closer look at. And by next Saturday night, when we hold the awards banquet, we'll name the nation's 4 outstanding young farmers. I've had the opportunity to emcee that banquet for quite a while and certainly look forward to it. Just as we look forward to joining you for this hour get-together on Saturday morning, Max Armstrong, yours truly, Orion Samuelson. As always, we appreciate your company. Thank you for joining us on Chicago's very own 720 WGN Chicago and WGNRadio.com, where it's 6 o'clock.
Orion Samuelson keeps you connected to the world of business and agriculture on WGN. Hear his reports weekday mornings on The Steve Cochran Show and during the noon hour on the Wintrust Business Lunch. Plus, catch Orion and Max on Saturday mornings at 5 a.m. only on Chicago's WGN Radio 720.